The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
So you have been in this effort to counter terrorism in Indonesia for a very long time.
Yes.
What have been some of the main lessons that you've seen over the last couple of years until today?
Simultaneous operations of soft approaches and also the hard approaches need to be done. So in the case of soft approach, hard approach, for the case of Indonesia, since Indonesia is, again, democratic society, democratic country, winning a war or a fight on terrorism actually is a popular warfare. How to win the hearts and minds of the majority, the populations. As long as the people, the majority of Indonesians sympathy to the government and antipathy to terrorists, then terrorists are not going to win. But if we mishandle the problem, such as, again, collateral damage quite a lot, you captured without respecting democratic values such as human rights and so on, so the sympathy can go to the terrorists, then it can be a problem. It can be the beginning of the defeat of the government. So the strategy on democratic society, for me, and my advice, is that law enforcement operation. You've got three instruments of the state in order to counter terrorism as far as hard approach is concerned. Number one is military, number two is intelligence, and number three is law enforcement agencies. Liberal democracy today are being applied in Indonesia. So in order to win the hearts and minds of the majority of the people, you must respect human rights. You must respect democratic values demanded by the people. So law enforcement, because based on law enforcement strategy, you know, we are simply saying that terrorism is a crime, right? So those committing crimes, they are criminals. So there are two fronts of battles in the case of law enforcement-led operations. Number one is that operation on the ground to monitor, detect, capture. And the second battle, actually intellectual battle, in the courtroom, they have got the right to defend, they have got lawyers and so on. So this is the battle, how to provide and to convince the judges based on sufficient evidence. So it is intellectual battle. You need such specific capabilities, including scientific criminal investigations. So this is the hard approach being applied by Indonesia. The second approach is, of course, the soft one. The soft one is that, you know, the center of gravity of Islamically inspired terrorism is ideology, particularly, you know, radical ideologies, Salafi jihadism and Takfirism. So you need to contain the spread of radical ideology. Number one, we could approach, radicals already converted to our side, right? Then we encourage them to change the narrative. You have got, say, like Ali Imran, Bali bombers. You have got also one senior ustad in Medan, right? Nasir Abbas, for instance. Because they have got the norms only trusting insider. So using them is very efficient and effective. The second one, apart from how to moderate radical narrative, is that, you know, to intensify socialization of challenging ideology. This is my term, challenging ideology. What are challenging ideologies to challenge the radical ideology? In the case of Indonesia, we are lucky enough because we have got moderate mainstreams, Nahdlatul Ulama, for instance, with a specific brand of Islam, namely Islam Nusantara. Democracy. Democracy is not an ideology that can challenge radical ideology. Encourage also democracy. And number three, of course, our Pancasila, five principles. That's why, you know, the government, the president already created a specific unit headed by Professor Yudi Latif, specific unit of intensifying, you know, Pancasila today. So this is the third program of countering ideology. The fourth program is that how to neutralize the channels spreading radical ideology, because radical ideology being transferred to people must be by the way of channels. So the best channels or the most active channel being used by terrorist network today is that using internet. So based on internet, you have got also the new phenomena of lone wolf, leaderless jihad, self-radicalization online, and so on. So you need also to create, you know, a strategy in order to neutralize the channels, such as, you know, creating a cyber troops to monitor, to do patrol online, radical website being taken down, closed down. Also, you know, sometimes you get into undercover, you get into the networks within the internet chat rooms and so on. Yeah, same thing like intelligence operations you're doing undercover, you know, getting into the community, monitoring the chattings, plans, you know, and so on. Then we track down on the field who are these guys, you know, then we can capture later on.
Marawi, it has been about more than 4 months and the conflict is still ongoing. How is this a serious threat to the region and including in Indonesia?
So in the case of Marawi, in my personal observation, it's not a local problem, but it is being part of the, you know, the global phenomena, what we call is Islamically inspired terrorism. They want to create again an image that what happened in Marawi is a religious fighting between Moro Muslim group in southern Philippines versus Manila Catholic government. So in that case, you have got two elements, you know, being adversaries. One is the government and the other one is the group supporting ISIS. What we are supposed the government of Manila to do is that to localize the issue as a simply a crime. Right. So regardless religions, ethnicities, whatever, we suppose that an image that could be created over there by the government is that there are some criminals committing crimes, killing people, torturing or whatever, using firearms, right? So since it is a crime, so no matter whatever religions you know, of those criminals. So they are just the government enforcing the laws. It is quite fair. Then what Manila I'm supposed, you know, not to do is that, you know, our enemy, the ICE, group ISIS, again trying to drag the issue to be a religious war. So on the strategic level, what we are advising to our counterparts over there during our trilateral meetings in Manila some 2 months ago, that, you know, on strategic level, law enforcement issue is very important rather than just military deployment that could affect, you know, and even could trigger a bigger movement and solidarity amongst the Muslim population over there.
While Marawi is brewing, situation in Syria and Mosul, they are on a retreat, and therefore we have foreign fighters coming back home. How are you dealing with these foreign fighters coming back? And there is now this lure, this attraction that the jihad battleground is even nearer in Marawi, like you said, they are ready to go. Yes. How are you dealing with this set of problem right now?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that the problem of terrorism in Indonesia is not going to be over as long as you have got conflicts in the Muslim world. So you have got, as long as you have got problem in Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq, you know, then it could be a magnet for jihadists around the world, including Indonesia, because they've got the same mindset, the concept of Ummah. All Muslims are brothers. It's almost impossible to eradicate totally terrorism, particularly Islamically inspired terrorism in Indonesia, because we have got only spillover of the problem in the center of gravity over there. What we can do is to minimize. So in order to do so, number one, of course, we are monitoring jihadist network in Indonesia very, very closely, whether they are GI element, Jamaah Islamiyah element, leaning to Al-Qaeda, and also those supporting ISIS, such as Jamaah Ansar Daulah. So we are monitoring. We improve also our capability to monitor and detect. So we already double the number of detachment at the aid since my leadership, because I know that the threat is not going to be over. Then we also cooperate with other intelligence elements in Indonesia, such as BIN, Badan Intelijen Negara, and also intelligence of the military. Apart from that, we are also improving our intelligence sharing with our friendly countries, such as, you know, in the region with Malaysia, Singapore, the Philippines, and beyond. We are also intensifying our cooperation with United States, Australian, the British, and also even with the Russian, because Russia also have got the same problem, more than 7,000 Americans from Chechnya getting into Syria, joining the ISIS.
We've seen a number of attacks taking place in Indonesia in the last couple of years. But after those attacks, we see that the society, the Indonesian society, actually came together. The society seemed to be a bit more resilient. Do you sense that, what could be the enabling factor, and do you sense that is Islamophobia following attacks like this, you know, being targeted at Muslims, or remaining compact as a community?
I think this is because of the strategy being developed by our government is quite appropriate, which is again law enforcement operations. Because based on these law enforcement operations, you know, we could discriminate against terrorists and from ordinary citizens, ordinary Muslims and so on. And, you know, since we have been successful in bringing them to justice and, you know, they are being sentenced in a fair and transparent trials, you know. So we could create a brand, an image, that terrorists is criminals. They are committing crimes, regardless religions. Right? It's not a matter of religious, you know, issue. It is a matter of a crime, criminal issue. So we are gaining sympathy from the public because public satisfy with the response from the government against the terrorist attacks or crimes being committed by terrorist groups. That's why, you know, once you have got an attack, right, then the public supporting the government because they know the government responding to a crime rather than religious fight or religious operations, whatever. But as I mentioned before, for today's condition, it is quite difficult to eradicate totally, you know, terrorist attacks and operations. Why? Number one, because the elements of radicals in Indonesia are already there, even before the independence of Indonesia. Yeah, we still recall, you know, the rebel group, you know, Darul Islam, for instance, once trying to envision creating Islamic State of Indonesia against the government. Then, you know, we still remember a number of attacks during the New Order era, even though in the New Order era, you have got very strong government with, you know, intelligence operations and strong legislations, draconian law, if you like, right? Anti-subversion law, 1963, now already removed. But, you know, you still have suffering a number of attacks, such as Borobudur bombing. You have got also the airline, Indonesian Airways, Garuda being hijacked, you know, in 1981, right? So, for today conditions, as I've already pointed out before, we have got only spillover of the problem. Element radicals already there, yeah, we can capture, but the mindset, the ideologies remaining there, then they've got a fresh oxygen because of the issue of Afghanistan, the issue of Middle East, you know, in the Muslim world and so on. So again, since we have got a spillover of the problem, the source of problem is not here. We suppose that the source of problem can be neutralized by international cooperation, whether in Syria, in Iraq, or in Central Asia, right? Or in the Southern Philippines. Then what we can do is that to minimize, you know, the activity of radical elements in Indonesia. This is what we can do.
Thank you so much, Daniel Tito. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
A A world of wonder awaits at Nemacolin. The Grand Lodge will surprise and delight with 56 stunning suites and 5-star butler services. Indulge in libations at the Circle Bar and Study before you savor the new and enchanting Fawn and Fable restaurant, where the best parts of a traditional steakhouse and a fairy tale castle create a magical dining experience. With fine dining, a spa, and over 100 adventures, golf, art, and wildlife experiences, whatever your imagination holds, Nemacolin has the key. Visit nemacolin.com for more information.